Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Matt Shipp from a company that he has created called Embury Solutions?
Embury.
Embury. Thank you for correcting me. Matt is a molecular plant biologist. Now, talking about coming from left field and doing something completely different, I can't wait to talk to him about this. He's turned into a workshop facilitator. He guides business teams to discover their most critical challenges and gives them a structured framework for bringing new ideas to market, making meaningful decisions, and becoming collaborative problem solvers. Thank you for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here.
So my first question is, and I ask everybody, is what was the turning point that you came from a molecular plant biologist to a workshop facilitator? What was that aha moment? Where did you see that little road where you're like that coincidence going, I think I'm going that direction?
Oh, man. Let's see if I can make this
short.
Give
me a 50,000 foot view.
Yeah, the 50,000 foot view. Well, a 16-year career in molecular plant biology. And from the last place I worked, it was kind of like I was doing all sorts of cool research projects, but the cogs were the same. The way I did the research was just kind of the same. And I was kind of feeling, I don't want to say necessarily burnout, but just like something's got to change, something's got to feel different. So I kind of asked myself, well, what do I enjoy doing right now? And what I was really enjoying is the overall process I've learned over the 60 years of just improving the processes, improving the protocol, being able to work within that flexibility, yet have a structure. And so I was like, okay, well, what can I do with it? So I started listening to other pipeline managers in the industrial research world. There's kind of like pipelines. You kind of hand off the research from pipeline to pipeline. Mm-hmm. And I just started listening to them and listen to what they're grumbling about. And I took a shot. I pulled one of them into one of the conference rooms, the whiteboard. I go, tell me everything you guys are doing in your pipeline, step to step. And instead of writing it down, I started drawing it out on the whiteboard. And I can never, with all of them, I can never finish without them stopping, interrupting me and asking me questions. Kind of like, hey, is that when I do this? I'm like, well, you told me, I'm just drawing it out on the board. And and then the next question would be like, why am I doing it that way? I don't know. You've been doing it this way for years. What was happening was they were able to visualize their process instead of just sitting up there in their head, just swimming around and kind of like, you know, you're chasing an idea in a forest of ideas. It's going to be much, much harder to isolate that. But once I put it into some sort of process and visualized it, they started seeing where their bottlenecks occurred and they were able to start fixing those on their own. And I did this three or four different people and just started calculating, how much, just kind of generalizing, how much am I saving them time-wise and money-wise with, you know, the staff they've got to manage through and the processes and showing them just a different way of thinking through it. And, you know, I was like, roughly comes out to maybe $20,000 a year for the company savings.
That's a lot of money. And,
well, you'd think. But then I went to the uppers and stuff. And I was like, hey, I'm doing this for them. And I think we're saving, you know, around, this is what how much we're saving potentially. And they're like, right. That's nice, Matt. Go back and do your job. Put me back in my box. I'm like, all right. So that's when all the fireworks, like, I'm on to something. I don't know what it is. And apparently for the size of company, 20 grand is nothing. So, but I bet you that's something to a smaller company or even a medium-sized business.
Excellent. Absolutely.
And so, you know, after trying a few more times and okay, you know, I decided to kind of pivot away from that career because I've just sort of hit, in my opinion, I hit my ceiling. And so I spent the next year and a half kind of figuring out, I have this process improvement. I don't know what to call it. And just searching around the world, just searching around other industries and seeing what do they call it? Do they use it? What is it? And I just kind of stumbled through the general. So first thing I discovered was the world of UX, user experience research. And they had a really neat system. The philosophy was very similar to the scientific method, except okay. Theirs was the scientific method with the kind of like the human element thrown in. Hmm. I liked it. I adopted, I charged, started learning it, but I really, what I didn't like was it was all digital transformation. And I didn't want to make apps. Right. All right. Well, then I kind of ran into another world looking for something that more fits in the physical world. And I ran into a thing called service design. And like that was really neat. That talks about touch points between clients and customers and all the front stage and backstage things that happen. And they had a wide learning curve, and nobody in the States really knew about it. In fact, I found out like the only there's one college in Texas that teaches it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it has its place. It's really more popular in Europe. And so I kind of messed with it a little bit. And then finally, I ran into a guy out in Berlin that took the process called Sprints from Google Ventures. They developed this system to find out how to invest in companies by taking their product and running it through a 2-week system and basically market testing it within 2 weeks and finding out what they need to improve, what they don't need to improve, and they could just fly through these. He took that and broke it apart into his separate modules and systems and kind of expanded on it. And he grew a $10 million agency out of it. And then he started a master course, and I jumped at it because it was like, this starts to speak to what I can do. I took it, ran with it, and I kind of turned it on his ear because, again, it was all based on digital transformation, digital tools. And I went completely left field and went non-digital. And there's a lot of non-digital problems that need solved. And this philosophy can help that. And I just had to figure out how to adapt it. And luckily enough, I came across a small coffee company that I'm currently working with for the last almost 2 years now. And just, hey, let me try things out. Don't pay me very much. Just get, you know, and I've really done weird things that I never thought I'd be doing with it. And I go back to the master course, go, hey, I helped this coffee shop design their own merchandise shelving. And I just use the baristas and the team leadership to do it. And they're like, what, Matt? You know,
very
so
cool.
How'd you do that? So what I discovered is I'm able to craft a highly structured framework around their problem space instead of making their problem fit my structure. And
say that one more time. I like it. So say it again.
I'm able to, once we kind of nail down what their problem is, I'm able to craft a framework around their problem, mm-hmm. succinctly kind of customize it to their problem rather than taking a rigid framework and trying to shove their problem into it and make it work.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant. I love that. No, keep going. Keep going. Tell me more. I love it.
So, yeah. So that's kind of what I've been able to kind of discover. And then, of course, working with a small business, they have their own constraints. This was originally designed for big, you know, digital transformation, you know, Googles and all that. So they have time to take 4 hours a day times 2 days and run through these things. I get the kids when they're at the end of the day, when they just want to go home, and now they're stuck with me for 2 more hours, you know? So I've had to find ways to constrain what that originally does. So I've found ways to compress, make it faster, but still capture as much. Like one cool thing that they didn't teach, but I found out just through experience, is if you're exhausted and you just want to go home and you're in a workshop, you're really good at pointing out problems. Much more efficient at pointing out problems. You're not so good at creating.
Right. Because you want to get the heck out of there.
Yeah, but you're really good. Yeah, you're grumpy at the end of the day. Want to go home? Like, oh yeah, this is a problem. This is a problem. You know, just left and right and collect them all day. And you can generalize some good solutions too. But when it came to creating, I was like, yeah, this is not the place. So out of necessity, I created, and I didn't even know what it was called at the time. I just did it because it needed to be done. An asynchronous workshop. So I created, using the digital tool Miro Board, and I would create a workshop that they would log into on their own time when they were feeling their most creative. I would put creative constraints in there, like draw a box with, like, for the shelf instance. I would mock up a shelf and give them tools like what a shelf would look like, and they just drag and drop in and make their own merchandise shelving, but kept it constrained so they didn't go completely crazy. And they would go ahead and design their own time. We go through, and then the next time I met them in person, I'd print those out and we go through and vote on aspects we liked, and then pull those aspects together into a master. And then I'd run those by a few customers in the coffee shop, get what their opinions were on it, and narrow it down, and then turn it over to the owner. And he selected the one he wanted, and we just measured it out. So now he has a blueprint to do it soon as he has the funds to do it. So that's another cool thing, is now you're prepared for when you do have the money. You're not spending the money on deciding what to do, but you're spending on the money on what you've already decided. You can just go forth. And you've already spent that time and money up front.
That is excellent. I love, one of the things I got to say, I mean, marking down some notes while you're talking. And so you have a process of procedure. That's what you do. You have a real good analog process of procedure. That's how I interpret it in my mind, of how you resolve problems. And obviously you don't have a problem communicating, and you can do it in a way that people are not, you know, you try to change someone, the wall comes right up. So yeah. You're not doing that. You're working with, how did you say you're working with them, not trying to get right into that problem, just go, boom, just go right there. You're resolving the problems by taking something from the outside and not having that rigid inside that's going on. I had a couple other questions in certain orders, but it doesn't matter to me. Please explain what asynchronous hybrid workshops means.
Well, I just did. That was the...
Do it more so I can understand it even better.
Okay. So...
You talked about it really fast. I just want to kind of get more into that of what that... Because, you know, I want to know exactly what you do and how it makes the business creative. They create the problem solving. I understand what you told me. And you're right. You did go through it. But I want to more... Why asynchronous? What do you mean by asynchronous as opposed to synchronous? Okay. That type of thing.
So asynchronous is, first, an asynchronous meeting would be you recording yourself and then sending out an email to your group, and then they listen to the video, and then they would record themselves, and then they'd reply, and then so you do it on your own time. So it's asynchronous. Synchronous is what we're doing right now.
Got it.
Talking to each other.
Okay.
So the asynchronous side of the workshop was I designed up the workshop and I made it. I embedded videos so they could watch, so they knew what I wanted to do, and then they would logged in on their own time, so they'd be more creative. Whether or not at the end of the day and exhausted for creative purposes, and would follow my directions and do it. And then that way everybody came in at their best time, whether the best time is 1 a.m. in the morning or at noon. It just, they could gauge that on their own.
Got it. So you've got these videos that are interactive for them only on an individual basis, whenever it's convenient for them. And are the videos that you've created, are they independent to each, you know, if it's a coffee shop, it's a sandwich shop, it's a big manufacturing, do you have to change something in it, or is it pretty much the same process or procedure?
To some degree. I mean, it depends. Now, the intro on how to use the digital board is always the same. But since the problems change, I usually have to redo a new video. Just the process might be the same, but explaining what they're doing around the challenge that they have would probably be different, which would require me to record something separate. But for the most part, it's just how to use it, what to do with it. So I would obviously show them an example. That's the best piece, is you need to show them what you're trying to do without the challenges, without biasing their decision. So in the case of the shelving, I would just say, I brought up a video of me. It's like, hey, you do this, you can just drop and drag. And I could cover the technical and what I needed to do at the same time. And this is an example of what I created. Now go into your module and go and create your own version. So they would see how I was doing it, get the idea, and then they can go in and do it, feel more comfortable.
Okay. I want to kind of break it down a little bit more so the audience understands and I understand it better. So now, how do you get all on board? So you do these, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way you're telling me, you know, you're doing this more on an individual basis. How do you get everybody to work together? How do you get then the group in? Because, you know, you got the ones that are more shy, the ones that are more aggressive and you're saying this or that, and the one you got to do it this way. How can you get, you know, as they say, the buy-in for everyone to work together and still accept other ideas, that type of thing, without having that fighting and get the job done? Because I think that's one of the biggest challenges, right? You could have five people and four of them, you know, want to go against it. One of them does, or vice versa. You want to get it as a team. So how do you create that team to work together?
Great segue. The answer is a term called alone together.
Oh.
So what happens here is in a typical meeting or typical brainstorming session, everybody is either, you've got different people. You've got people, you've got the introverts, you've got the extroverts, you've got the guy who sells, you've got the hippo, the highest paid person with an opinion. In the
room. Is that on his business card?
Yeah, I hope not. But everybody, every company has one.
Right.
So what alone together does is normalizes all of that. And it normalizes it by a simple exercise of just saying, okay, here is our general challenge. You can ask the question, you know, what is your biggest challenge right now in this company related to sales? You can go as wide as you want, narrow as you want.
Okay.
However, the rule is nobody starts talking. You get with your on digital or you're in person, you get a stack of sticky notes. And I give you a time constraint. So you've got the sticky notes says one idea per sticky. Okay. And write as many as you can in 5 minutes. You have a time constraint. So that keeps you from overthinking it, but it keeps you moving. Writing everything down, that's the alone. You are together under the same challenge, but you are alone with your own ideas. So now when I say 5 minutes, go, you're jotting down all your ideas or typing out all your ideas on the digital post note or the physical post note, depending which way you're doing it.
Right.
And you're just listen up. Then at that's done. So nobody's talked yet. You haven't had a sales guy. The introvert actually gets to put their ideas out there. The sales guy can't talk. He gets frustrated, but he can't talk. the extroverts can't talk to each other.
Right.
And everybody's focused on that one thing, that one challenge, but coming up with their own individual ideas separately. Now, the beauty of this is you get to visualize all of this. So at the end of it, everybody like sticks all their ideas up on the board just randomly because it doesn't matter. So it kind of creates a system of this is a tough word, anonymity. There we go. and because, I mean, yeah, you could sit there and judge everybody's handwriting, but if you're digital, it's truly anonymous. So
good point.
Everything from the CEOs to the new guys' ideas are there equal, normalized, and present at the same time.
A
typical open forum discussion, you really only remember like 5 to 7 things at the top of your head. Literally, there's papers that you can really only maintain 5 to 7 memories, direct short-term memories at any one given time. So typically you remember the person who spoke first and the person who spoke last. Everybody else's ideas are lost to the void. Well, what happens here is we've captured everything and you give your brain an access point to go through everything that was captured.
Wow.
You've done this in 5 minutes and it took you an extra minute to stick them up. Now you say, okay, everybody go up front. You give them a moment to look over all the ideas. Just quietly look over all the ideas and you give them some voting dots or an electronic version. They can vote on it electronically. And then you give another time constraint. And this one really makes them nervous because you're like, okay, you've got 3 minutes. You got to use all your stickies and you can vote. Only rule is use all of them. Use all your votes.
Okay.
And then from the populated challenges, maybe, or ideas, whichever one you're on, everybody goes in and quietly reads and puts ones I think that are the most significant challenges, the most significant ideas or whatever. And all of a sudden you've created this funnel where you've actually taken all this cloud of ideas and funneled it down to maybe the top 4 or 5. You just rank them.
All right.
And now we've spent maybe 15 minutes doing this.
Yeah, that was my next question. That's amazing. Okay, keep going.
So then and what you're teaching them is here's another way of communication without jabbering the whole time.
Right.
We've taken this, what could have been an hour meeting just to decide what we wanted to work on.
Right.
And whittled it down to the top 5 in 15 minutes. Now we're going to take the top most voted one, or maybe they can discuss like, oh yeah, this is a really high vote, but this one's really what we want to work on. So, you know, within range, all the other ones, it's really fun. All the other ones you just say, well, we're going to throw these in the bin, the trash bin. And they all freak out. Well, these are all great ideas. I'm like, what happened here is the ones you guys collectively voted on are probably going to solve most of the ones you left behind.
Ooh, very nice. But they don't see it that way because they're looking at it from the internal point of view. You're got that external point of view and you're seeing it. Oh, that's very productive. Okay. All right. Keep going. So what do they do next?
So then they'll, you know, take those, whether they're challenges or ideas, and we can either, if they're a challenge, we reframe that challenge into this is a problem to this is a challenge into what we call a how might we statement. So, you know, what the how might we is, you know, how might we as a collective tackle this challenge? And might means there's many possible different solutions. So how might we, you know, increase sales for this quarter? Or how might we address the fact that the cafe is kind of messy at the end of the day and we don't really have a good system for it,
cleaning
up or anything, you know, whatever. So then we just use that same process again. All right, we've reframed this problem into a challenge. Now everybody gets 6 to 8 minutes to come up with your best solutions. We're actually after quantity, not quality, because the quality will come out in the quantity because you're just generalizing. And your brain just starts getting the cogs going. You come up with some really random things and then pretty soon it gets more detailed within that time. Supplying that constraint of time really gets you fixated. You can't fixate on one thing, but you can just start putting them out there. And this takes a little bit of practice. So the first time you do this with a group, they're a little bit shy and they're like, well, I can't come up with any more than two. I'm like, just start writing stuff. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Say you're going to bring your cat in to do the dishes, or just get your brain loose.
Right.
And eventually over time, they kind of get that idea. And sometimes you'll add more time as you see if they're struggling. But again, then you have this population, this collective diverse idea cloud, comrade, you stick it up, visualize, everybody has access to it. We just do the same process again.
Well, I like that you're activating the imaginational mind, is what I call it, from the subconscious, as opposed to that conscious mind folder of this is the way we do it. So in my previous life, I was an engineer, a manufacturing plant out. We could have used you. Where were you? You know, because the sales guys, yeah. I was the tech support guy. I mean, I was the guy who helped with the designs, but I was the one that represented. I went to your hospital. I went to your car. We designed x-ray tubes. The company's gone now, but it was a great place, but everybody's fighting with everybody. It's interesting that you say that, you know, it's a coffee shop. It doesn't matter what it is. They're all doing the same stuff. And it's so unproductive. And people get frustrated. You want somebody to be, you know, and then they go home and they're, you know, they're frustrated at home, and then they're, you know, grumpy with their wives, their children, their families, their friends. And then I come back and they're grumpy the next day, necessarily the same way. But it's that mind and how you activated, I call it the process and procedure, how you really geared this to people's imaginations and not having that filtering folder coming in going with these preconceived notions, because they already have them. And we all have them, right? Mm-hmm. You just eliminated them because you're taking it from the outside in. And I love that sticky note idea. And I love that you're putting it up there on the board or digital or whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then you're not going, that was Jim's idea. That was Susie's idea. Who cares? It doesn't matter. We all want the same thing. We want the company to grow. We want to make more money. We want to have more efficiencies. We want to get more customers. And you're really breaking that down very, very well. So you totally got me on that with the problems. Where were you? Oh, we could have used you, for crying out loud.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah, well, because manufacturing, and I was in manufacturing for over 25 years, and I traveled the world supporting the product. So I had to come back and learn things to be able to communicate this. And I mean, I met manufacturing places all over the world. I went to hospitals all over. I met people everywhere. And it's always the same thing. It's always the same thing, what you were going through. But what I love about this is, and that's why I contacted you. I want to see how people are communicating consciously and how they're doing it in different ways and how you're doing it in your imagination, how you activated people's brains in different cells that they normally don't work at. Because, you know, if you're going to be one of those people that, you know, you're rolling up your sleeves, you know, going, all right, now let's get started. I want to talk to you. I want somebody, I'm not a big proponent of this particular phrase, out of the box thinking, but you're, for lack of a better word, that's what you do. And it's wonderful, because I just can't stand that statement, because in the corporate world, they overused it every other day. It's like, I just redid the bathroom. That was because of an out of box. I'm like, stop saying that, please. So let's see. And I wanted to ask you, because I went to another question. So what does Emberi stand for?
Emberi is a Hungarian word that means human. So I named my organization Emberi Solutions. So technically it's human solutions, and that's what I'm doing.
Oh, I love it. I love that stuff. Okay, because what I really like is, I don't have a problem with digital stuff. I mean, this is the way the world, it's not an issue.
Yeah.
But there are many things, there's a mixture of the analog and the digital. You've got to have that mixture together. Absolutely. And knowing when to mix those together is difficult, because everybody says, oh, the technology is changing. It's an old saying, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Mm-hmm. They're not really changing. It's just there's things coming at you so fast, and you don't have time to do it because you're busy with your life here, busy with your life there. And I love that you're coming from the analog way, because it's slower, it's more methodical, and it gets into the most important part. It gets into the mind, not to what's going on in the world. I don't want to hear about that. Let you share what's going on in your mind first. Let's get you relaxed. So, okay, let me take a look at this. You already answered this question. What can you do to help business owners become better leaders? But I want, you know what? I got it from there. I want you to answer it. So what the owners specifically, I know what is in my mind, but I want you to say it. What do you do? How can you get that out of the business owners to become better leaders? What are the things, other than what you're doing, is there something you sit down and talk with them about? What do you do to get that out of them?
This is an ongoing experiment. So a couple things I've observed, being the scientist that I am, observed that a couple things happen. One, the owner gets to step back into his role and he doesn't have to be the facilitator. Bringing in a third party facilitator creates a little bit of a psychological safety, as a new term being thrown around, with the group, as in, okay, you've got somebody from the outside, so it's just not us at the company, or we're scared to say things. You kind of have this release valve. And that empowers the staff to say more things that are really on their mind, to give the owner clarity of what's really happening in his company. That's one piece. And this is like an unintended consequence, but this is what happens. The other one is, like, since the owner gets to step back into what he originally viewed, he gets to step back into the team. He gets to be a team member for the first time in a while. So he gets to share his ideas and not try to split his mind between running a meeting and coming up with ideas. What happens there is you kind of subtract one for the other and you just say, okay, these are the ideas we should be working on. And nobody really at the end gets to share any of their ideas. And then you lose buy-in with your team, lost buy-in. People don't care as much because they don't have buy-in, and they start burning out, and you have that team turnover that is really plaguing a lot of companies right now.
So you're keeping people. I love this. You're keeping people involved because it is collaborative. If you really want something to, I keep repeating it, where were you? But it's, I can share, but I listen. But I also have my sense of humor, and my dry sense of humor. And because I wasn't always stuck in one department. I worked in the sales and marketing group because I was the guy that showed up in the t-shirt with the company name and a pair of jeans. The other guy was a sales guy. So I was like, who is this guy? I'm like, oh, I'm the engineer that takes care of stuff. I get my hands dirty. This is the guy that talks to the ones with the problems. But when you're dealing with internal problems, and I mean, this is all over. Like I said, it's from a coffee shop to an X-ray tube manufacturer, to a car manufacturer, to anything. What you're hitting on is great. I mean, it's something that is a big hole. And the biggest thing that I see is how you do it. It's how you're approaching this from an analog way, and you're mixing that digital when it's needed, but you don't want to focus on it too much because it tends to gear things away. You know, typing things are I like doing whiteboards. I have my philosophy. It's called Agenoi. It's an imaging technique, and it creates a mindset. And I have a few students right now, and I have a whiteboard. Mm-hmm. And when you do that and you can share verbally on a whiteboard or sticky notes or all the stuff that you're doing, you need people to, and you know this, you need to write it down on a piece of paper. Sticking it in that 9 million different crazy thoughts that are going through your head that are gone in 2 seconds all the time, you're focusing them in a way to just imagine what you have, and don't be afraid of it, because no one's going to know who suggested it. Nobody's going to know. And also you're going to the human solution. I love the name. Emberry. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Okay. So, and it's spelled Emberi. So the human solution, because when you're not in front of anybody, whatever your personality is, and you see your thing up there, you know, you feel good. It makes you feel good. And whether you use it or not, it's not so much important that somebody's listening to you. Somebody's listening to you, which creates then somebody going home relaxed. And then when they're sleeping, or when they're caving their cup of coffee in the morning, or when they're out with friends, their family, suddenly an idea pops in their head, because they're more like, oh, somebody's going to listen to me, but I don't have to worry about being on the spot. And you were talking about the CEO. That's super important. Include him as a team member, not the owner. And that has to open. That's got to start with that CEO, because not all CEOs are opening to doing that. They're very, depending on, it's very, like you said, it's a moving target. It's something that you're always challenged with. So you want to work with somebody that's open to that idea. Okay, so I see that the services that you offer. So part of the philosophy, and my philosophy is, in Agenoi, is discovery, awakening, and transformation. That's just a certain part of it, how to work with the subconscious mind. You have discover, evaluate, realize. Tell me about that.
So my three, which is very close, so as synonyms here, is I have reframed the problem, engaged the team in solutions, and generated an action plan. So,
okay. Give me an example. So
while we frame the problem, you have to have first you got to identify the problem space. And so that's the very first thing we do out of the gate is just understand where the problem is in general. Whether it's, if we want to start super wide, what in this company is moving us forward? What in this company is holding us back? You can start that wide, or you can narrow it down. You can kind of do like an interview with the owner and try to get their opinion where they want to start. If they want to just start wide out and then gather those pieces, we can do that too. But once you decide based on that, like I said, like the note and vote system, and you isolate that problem, now you've coalesced your entire team around that one problem because they had the buy-in, they had the idea, and they all said, yeah, this is our biggest challenge right now. And does two things. And then you start solving for that challenge, creating solutions. And the whole time, you're engaging your team. So you're getting a diversity of ideas. Often the challenge isn't what the owner thinks it is.
Oh, that's true. No, that's an excellent point because, well, no, of course it wouldn't be. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So anything else to add to that?
And then basically from there, any of my sessions ends with actionables, but not just go out and do it and this will solve the problem. We go out and do enough of it to test the solution.
Okay.
And that also has a time constraint. You go out and we come up with like three things to check off with this solution, three ideas, and you give, you either volunteer or voluntold them members to each solution.
Right.
And they go out and they try to do these three things you put per solution, just to test it out, test out the solution. Are we going in the right direction? Give them 2 weeks. They come back. We run a little like retrospective and we just ask them, okay, based on this solution, what worked, what didn't work, and what would you do next? And really quick, they'll start figuring out like, okay, this solution was not what we thought it was. This is not work. So you just shed it. And then the next one is, okay, this one is actually working. We want to try a few more things. Okay, then you follow that one down the road and so on and so forth. So you either find out what works, what really doesn't work with your solutions. Okay. What you're doing there is you're saving yourself a ton of time and money because now you know you're not going to chase something down for 6 months to find out that wasn't the best way to do it. You're going to start testing this solution. It's like, hey, okay, let's take this a little further and look at it again. Let's take it a little further. So it's sort of like the iteration.
Right. Interesting.
That way you're keeping what works and you're getting rid of what doesn't in a very, succinct manner. And that way you're just not telling your team, go off and conquer. And they're like, we did it, boss. And you're like, well, that didn't make us any money, so
you're doing a more methodical way of getting it done. I think one of the problems is that when you have people over, sometimes they'll give you homework. Nobody does homework.
Yeah.
They think they do. So I go take these brochures home and do this. And it sits on your nightstand and you're dusting your furniture for 6 months and then you throw it in the recycle bin or in the garbage. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing, if I understand correctly, and I believe I do, is that you're saying, let's take this out right now. Let's do this now. Let's start figuring it out now. Let's testing it now. You're not going to say, okay, try these things. I'll see you guys later. Thanks for coming to my seminar and my training session. So how long does your program, you obviously have to be very adjustable with this. It could be a month, 6 months, a week. Where do you go with this?
So before we get to there, that 2 week period is I show them how to do that. Then it's pretty much they can do it their own. Because the meeting is simple. What worked, what didn't work, what do you want to move on with?
Got it.
I step away after that 2 week review because I know how to do it. And they can take those projects as far as they want. I'm not exactly the accountability coach, but they have to be accountable to their boss. So hopefully they get it done.
You can't force them.
Yes. So when I first approach a group and they want to do something like this, and then you get into that reframing that problem or their priorities, that first session is typically about 2.5 to 3 hours. And in 2.5 to 3 hours, we go from identifying the problem to isolating down the biggest challenge to creating solutions in about 2.5 to 3 hours.
Wow.
And we assign the actionables, and I see it again in 2 weeks for about an hour, and that is that.
Okay.
The beauty of that first 3 hour session is you not only get several solutions. A lot of these solutions, some of them are quick and easy, low hanging fruit, and that's what we're after. But a lot of great ideas that have big impact on your company take a little bit more lifting, a little bit more effort, but they still would have a good impact on the company. So it's something you can't really solve in a short amount of time. Those become separate projects. Now they can work on them on their own. They can bring me back in, and I can design a framework, a more strategy-based framework around those, where we would take and first look how your competitors are doing it, design your own prototype, and put that prototype on a roadmap. So when you're there, you know where to start from.
Okay.
And then start building it out. So you could take a larger project and break it into pieces, roadmap it, and then they have projects to move forward with.
Well, you've got amazing insight to, obviously you've really worked very hard and did a lot of research that you said at the beginning to come up with these ideas. How long has your business been around?
I've been around about 2 years.
Okay. So you're in considering businesses, you're still new, but I'm sure it took you a while before you opened your doors and did it, because you want to be able to, you can't answer everything, you know. Yeah. You have to find along the way. I'm sure you're still developing things and changing things. Absolutely. All the time, because you know, you have to grow with what's happening. I'm trying to think of any other questions. You've covered absolutely everything. I was thinking that you're more like the psychologist of the group, and you know how sometimes psychologists go, well, what do you think? And you're kind of doing it that way, but you're actually engaging them in their minds in a way that could contribute to the business. This philosophy you have can work with families. This thing can work with business. It could work with schools. It could work with children. It could work with a class. And again, it's a more analog way of doing things, because when you do things in that paper and pencil, when you put that down and you start writing it down, it's some kind of, I don't know, synapse things that are going in your brain. It's different than typing. It's different than speaking in some, you know, audio software or something, because it makes it firm, because it's something about just coming right out from your mind, directly from your body onto a piece of paper. And when people do that, it starts creative ideas even more and even faster. So, I mean, just your company is doing an amazing thing. And I love how you're activating the mind and how you're just creating that atmosphere of calmness that people can use their imagination and put those sticky notes up, and nobody's, oh, look at this, look at the, you know, even though we're adults, we still act like we're in high school, right? You know, da da da. Well, you don't put that uncomfortable feeling in there for people to share, because not everybody, I know my wife, you know, you and I, we could stand in front of, you know, 10,000 people and, yeah, whatever, we'll keep sharing and we'll never run out of things to talk about. My wife has no, you know, how you go into those groups, they go, we'll do breakout sessions. Well, in her job, she says, I hate those things. I don't want to share. I mean, it's not nothing wrong with that, but she's got good ideas and she's learned in her own way how to get them out, because the company she works for is very open with that. But they don't do it the way you're doing it, but they do it in a way that's not like putting you in front of somebody. What's your idea? Because, again, not everybody's like you and I, where you're going, oh, sure, I'll share it, you know, and you know how to do it and you ask input. But I love this whole M. Barry, and I'm just saying M because I'm thinking the letter M. M. Barry Solutions. It's Matthew Shipp. I went on his website. It's a really nice website, by the way. And I appreciate you coming on as being a guest. I love having these conversations. And the last thing I'm going to say to my conscious community is the same thing I say all the time. Remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at consciouscommunicationpodcast.com.